You know, if you're going to New Orleans, you ought to go see the Mardi Gras. You know, if you're going to New Orleans, you ought to go see the Mardi Gras. You know, when you see the Mardi Gras, somebody'll tell you what's carnival for.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. We couldn't go to the party ourselves, but we decided to bring the party to you. Today we'll be checking in on the festivities in New Orleans, learning some of the history of the music from Mardi Gras, and speaking to some musicians who question whether the party should go on at all, just 6 months after Hurricane Katrina. To begin, we hit the streets with music critic of the New Orleans Times-Picayune, Keith Sparra. Keith is not on reporting duty today. He's actually participating in the Mardi Gras festivities. Keith, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Hey, my pleasure.
So, where are you? And I ask this, somewhat hesitantly, but what are you wearing?
Well, I am in the southeast corner of the French Quarter at the corner of Royal and St. Philip Street, and I am wearing a diaper and a bonnet and a bib.
A diaper, a bonnet, and a bib.
Specifically, I am Britney Spears' son, and my wife is Britney Spears, and we're actually recreating the infamous photo of her recently driving with the baby on her lap. That is our Mardi Gras costume.
That's your Mardi Gras. Okay, so it sounds like things are pretty much back to normal, at least for this day there at Mardi Gras. What floats have gone by, and which crews have you seen?
Well, this morning you had Zulu, which is the traditionally African-American crew parading, followed by Rex. And Rex, of course, is the king of the entire carnival celebration. So that's they rolled down the traditional uptown route along St. Charles Avenue, which is part of the town that was largely unaffected by the storm. And but right now we're in the French Quarter, where the official parades don't roll, but numerous informal marching organizations kind of take to the streets with drums and percussion and costume, and I think that's probably what you're hearing in the background right now.
Right, we can hear the drums in the background. So let me ask you, Keith, standing there in your diaper and your bib, do you stand out in that crowd?
Frighteningly enough, not at all. I'm actually a little overdressed, perhaps, because I am actually wearing like a long john type thing and a pair of tights to go with it. But it's like about 78 degrees and clear skies, so the amount of costume is inversely proportional to the temperature. So basically, as the temperature is going up, the costumes get smaller, basically.
Right. Now, has the parade this year, does it seem to you to be perhaps less festive, thinner crowds?
There are 2 weekends to Mardi Gras this year, basically. 2 weekends and then these extra couple of days to Tuesday. The first weekend was thin, and that was partly a function of weather. I mean, there were gray skies, and it was misty. But there are definitely smaller crowds in the French Quarter, Bourbon Street and all that, where the tourists tend to congregate. But I tell you what, I was uptown Sunday on Napoleon Avenue in St. Charles for a couple of the big parades, and without a doubt, there were bigger crowds there than I've ever seen. And those crowds there, camped out on the medians, are mostly local families. I mean, I grew up here as a kid. We staked out our same spot on St. Charles Avenue every year. My family, my aunts, my uncles, cousins, we had our own place where we'd go and camp out and have a cooler full of food and stay there all day. And that was definitely happening in spades over the weekend. I mean, it's almost like locals are out to sort of reaffirm their connection to the city and what the city's all about.
Right. We're speaking with Keith Sparra. He's the music critic of the New Orleans Times-Picayune, and at the moment he is actually participating in the Mardi Gras festivities, parading down the streets of the French Quarter. Keith, we've heard of a blue theme running through a lot of the festivities, the costumes, sort of a reference to the ubiquitous blue tarps that FEMA came and put over many of the homes that had been damaged. Are you seeing a lot of an unusual amount of blue this year on Mardi Gras?
know, purple, green, gold are normally the Mardi Gras colors, but yeah, this year it might be royal blue. There was actually a blue top fashion show that took place down by the Riverwalk on the Mississippi River yesterday. But a ton of satirical costumes. George Bush and the FEMA guys and Mayor Nagin are certainly being spoofed like crazy all around the place. There was a contingent of Looter Girls that just went by as opposed to Hooter Girls. There was a guy pushing a shopping cart that was piled high with cases of Heineken and a crock pot and a computer box, and his sign on it said, "The very, very first responders." So he was the looters, basically. The city's ability to sort of poke fun at itself and the circumstances that have happened to us is one of its, I think, redeeming qualities. And that's how people are trying to get past it, is to have some fun with it and make fun of it. I mean, everybody knows the reality that is still going to be there tomorrow. And, you know, it's certainly been acknowledged, this Mardi Gras. The crew of Muses the other night, their last float was had no riders on it. It was kind of like the horse without a rider. It was a memorial to the people that were lost. And, you know, it's kind of woven through the celebration. I mean, two of the prominent carnival songs, Mardi Gras Mambo that Art Neville sang, and Carnival Time by Al Johnson, you know, both of those guys were affected by the storm. Mm-hmm. Art Neville's house got part of his roof blown off, and it was ransacked. Al Johnson lived in the lower Ninth Ward, and I think, you know, everybody knows what happened there. I mean, his house was completely obliterated. So, you know, those are the guys that provide, really, you know, the soundtrack of the season. They were affected. So it's not that, you know, no one here has forgotten what has happened, or, you know, it's just, this is really the first exhale for the city since the storm. It's been 6 months of nothing but Katrina, and so right. This is an exhale.
All right. Well, it sounds like you know, as you say, there's certainly been notice taken, and it's all sort of been woven into the fabric of this year's Mardi Gras. But Mardi Gras is going on, and Keith Sparra is part of it. He's the music critic of the New Orleans Times Picayune. Keith, thanks for joining us again, and you know, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Amen to that. A little Hershey Kiss just walked by me. A little play on Mary Nagin's infamous Chocolate City comment. So there's a lot of that going on.
All right. Keith Sparra, thanks for being with us on Soundcheck.
My pleasure.
Well, it may be part show of recovery and part escape from a tough reality, or a big exhale, as Keith Sparra just told us, but Mardi Gras has a very special meaning to New Orleans this year. Still, there are many residents who believe the city should not be celebrating at all this year. One of them is clarinetist Dr. Michael White, whose house and music collection were destroyed by Hurricane Katrina. He joins us by phone from New Orleans. Dr. White, welcome to Soundcheck today. Dr. White?
Yes, hello.
Hi. Thank you for joining us. I know that Katrina was sort of a, you know, collective tragedy for the city of New Orleans, but a personal one for you, the loss of your music, your house, your mom and your aunt, I understand, are now relocated to Houston. How are you coping with all of this?
Well, I'm coping as best as I can. Like so many thousands of people from here. You know, this is an ongoing thing for us, and it's unfortunately not the kind of tragedy that, you know, it happened and you just move on. When you have, you know, families and relatives that are dealing with the whole issue of displacement, trying to survive in strange places, and, you know, dealing with a variety of physical, emotional difficulties that come along with that, you know, so... It's kind of tough, but we're doing the best that we can.
Well, now, you're in New Orleans, but not celebrating Mardi Gras, which puts you in a, I guess, kind of a difficult situation. Do you feel like you're making a personal or even a professional statement by not playing in or taking part in the festivities this year?
Well, you know, I think everybody has to make their own choices, but I think it's, for me personally, you know, there's just a lot going on. You know, there's too much uncertainty and all of that. Now, that's not to say that, you know, I don't think that anyone should not you know, do as they wish to do.
Mm-hmm.
Just this past Sunday, I participated in the 12th annual jazz service with my band, in which we play hymns. It's like a worship service of hymns, to which comes Sunday before Mardi Gras. And I think, you know, in a way, that was for us like a release and like a coming together in a prayer service. And I mean, it wasn't certainly all sad. I think we played only one slow song the whole day.
Mm.
And it was really very celebratory and up-tempo. But the thing is that was, you know, the kind of release that I needed.
So you heard Keith Sparra a few minutes ago from the Times-Picayune talking about the Mardi Gras as kind of a big exhale, that a lot of people felt like they needed that.
Yes.
It sounds like you know, this service, was it a week ago Sunday that you did this?
No, just this past Sunday.
This past Sunday?
Yes.
Sounds like maybe that was, you know, kind of serving a similar purpose for you.
I think that's what it was for me and for a lot of people. I had a lot of people at the service, and, you know, many of them came up to us afterward and said that was Mardi Gras for them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of felt the same way. It was a combination of, you know, enjoying the music for me, releasing some of the emotions through music, but it was also a way of remembrance and also prayer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so that's kind of how a lot of people are dealing with this, through, you know, hope, through prayer. And,
well, and your family, I mean, we're speaking with Dr. Michael White, the White family. You've been part of the history of New Orleans music for many generations. Do you know exactly how long the family has been a part of it there?
Well, you know, I've been able to trace relatives of my family on my mother's side, several relatives that were jazz musicians that go back to, you know, the 1890s as far as performance, and they were certainly active and on the scene from the very beginning of jazz. And, you know, some of the older musicians all the way into the 1960s.
Mm-hmm. So what did Mardi Gras mean to you pre-Katrina?
Well, you know, it was a time of celebration, but there were a lot of locals who looked at Mardi Gras as a holiday time, a time to rest, a time to get out of town. I mean, if you're from New Orleans, you like celebrating life all the time. So for me, I mean, being from New Orleans, every day was a celebration in a way. So Mardi Gras was a special thing, maybe a time to get together with families and things like that. But, you know, for me, every day was a celebration.
Hmm. And now, post-Katrina, you know, even though you're not celebrating Mardi Gras this year, does it still have a meaning, albeit perhaps a different one for you now?
Well, everything here now is pretty surreal. You know, there's so many different levels and layers of existence now. And I think, you know, the whole idea of Mardi Gras, if you think about it, is a way of masking reality. And you know, sort of creating a pseudo reality, and it's a little tough for me to you know, abandon the other layers of reality, you know, too much, because there's just so much going on. You know, there's so much uncertainty in terms of the lives of the people. There's so much confusion, and so, you know, it's everything is very, very different, very different. It's hard for a large number of people to really know what's going to happen to them in the next couple of weeks, the next month, the next year. So it's really tough.
Well, and of course, many people have not yet returned, and in fact, many African American residents haven't returned. I understand that the Zulu Parade, I mean, Keith Sparrow was telling us, the Zulu Parade went on as usual, the big African American part of Mardi Gras. But, you know, how noticeable is the kind of racial shift, the shift in the color of the city in recent months?
Well, you know, I understand that, you know, a lot of the clubs and things that went on did so with a certain number of members missing, and some in protest, some not in the city. So, you know, I don't know. But the thing is that the dynamics of the city are changing, and it's really difficult to say, because it's I've been based in Houston all of this time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come to New Orleans, it just depends on where you are, where you're going. But you see a noticeable shift in the city. One, I mean, we always had, you know, a sizable Hispanic population, but there's a much larger number of Hispanics in town now, mainly as workers.
Mm, right.
So more than 50,000. So you notice that quite a lot.
Well, now I mentioned your mom, your aunt have been also relocated to Houston after living, I guess, their whole lives in New Orleans, and that certainly has to be a hardship for the whole family. Are you looking long term? Are you thinking of keeping that long standing white family history going there in New Orleans?
Well, you know, there are a lot of factors to think about in terms of my mother and my aunt. I mean, their situation, while it hits me very, very deeply personally, their sentiments and what's going on with them, you know, it echoes what's happening to tens of thousands of people. I mean, they're both in their 80s, my mother and aunt, and they've been, I've been watching them gradually go down emotionally and physically during this whole displacement ordeal, and it's been very difficult. Sometimes you feel kind of helpless. You do the best you can. About a month ago, about 2 months ago, my mother really took everything very hard, and she ended up in a hospital,
mm-hmm.
and from there in a nursing home, which pre-Katrina, I mean, was not even a serious
right.
thought for us.
Right.
Now it looks like, you know, that's it for her. So whether or not we bring her back here, if we find a proper facility operational, is another story.
But a
lot of older people are having difficulty trying to figure out if they're going to come back, start over, and it's really tough on them.
Well, I think anybody listening can see why you have chosen, even though you're there in New Orleans today, not to be celebrating Mardi Gras. It's, Katrina was 6 months ago, but obviously the ripples continue to be felt throughout the region there in the southeastern United States. We've been speaking with Dr. Michael White, the clarinetist and professor of African American music at Xavier University. Michael, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, and we hope to have the chance to speak to you again, perhaps under happier circumstances next time.
Thank you very much. God bless you.
Dr. Michael White, my guest on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. It's our Mardi Gras special, and people from New Orleans, well, they find a way to live with struggle and with contradictions. So says Kenneth Ferdinand, a Crescent City native and one of the first business owners to reopen after Katrina. Kenneth owns Café Rose Nicot on Frenchman Street, just two blocks from the French Quarter. Kenneth is also a trumpet player, and he joins us today from the streets of New Orleans. Kenneth, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hello, how are you?
All right, so we called you earlier today just to check
really
in,
up.
And you were trumpeting away, so how's the celebration been going so far?
It's been wonderful. It's been challenging. A lot of people, not as many as usual, but a lot of people on the street. My band has just gone ahead about a block or so, and I'm in the garage of one of the hotels in the French Quarter right now.
Okay, so you found a quiet place to talk. We appreciate that.
I'm accommodating you guys.
All right. Did you do the March to the River earlier today?
No, we're going to be going there. Actually, we're headed down Charters now. We just passed St. Louis, and I'm at St. Louis and Charters, and the band is going toward Canal Street.
All right. Just for folks who haven't heard about this yet, tell us what the March to the River is.
Okay, well, we're actually marching through the French Quarter, and we came out of the Faubourg Marigny neighborhood to the French Quarter, crossing Esplanade. And so my band in the parade has just passed, and they're about two blocks ahead. When we finish this, we should be hooking up right when Zulu and Rex cross Canal Street. From there, we're going to march back down Decatur to the French Market area, Washington Artillery Park, go down to the river. And that's where the emotional peak of this parade ends, at the river, as opposed to, you know, the den or somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. And I understand people will be bringing flowers and ashes and things to the river's edge.
Absolutely. I've been in this about 10 years, and flowers, ashes, and a real, real loving, caring gospel song at the end of the parade for us.
So this is something that has a kind of a special added meaning or significance, I'm sure,
yeah.
to virtually
yeah,
everybody there today.
This is probably more local-driven than it is tourist-driven. So people who know that they have something serious to grieve, hello?
Mm-hmm.
Hello, yeah, are bringing that grieving process to the river.
Right. Well, now, you have been through something like this before, I understand. You survived Hurricane Betsy back in 1965.
Yes, but both Dr. Michael White and I lived in that section called the Lower Ninth Ward.
Mm-hmm.
We had a Betsy that was supposedly, in our estimation, as high a category as you can give it, but it probably was a 3 or 4 storm. And we flooded then the same canal, the Industrial Canal, almost at the exact same point, broke. And we were suspicious, but we didn't understand that we were, elevation-wise, the lowest point in the area. And so it was probably convenient for some to assure or think about the breakage of the levee, and for most of us, that wasn't even a question.
Mm.
So we really sat and slept and all of that rigor that you do for hurricanes, and then we woke up and we had a flood.
Right. And you lost your grandfather in the flooding of Hurricane Betsy.
My grandfather lived actually one house, which is about 60 feet away,
mm-hmm.
next house. And we couldn't get him. The winds were too high when it was blowing, and we didn't know that it was going to flood, so my father told my little brother and I that it was better if we left grandfather at his house.
Mm-hmm.
Then try to bring him across in that wind, because my little brother and I were hit with a piece of corrugated tin from a roof, so it was no environment for an 80-year-old man.
Right.
Unfortunately, the waters came in Betsy in 65, and that same levee, that same area broke, and my grandfather was drowned in that flood.
Well,
and you get to now in Katrina, and it's deja vu.
Right, right. Well, you heard Dr. Michael White just a moment ago. You know, he's not celebrating Mardi Gras. He lost his home in the Ninth Ward and all of his, you know, music collection, paraphernalia,
yeah.
jazz history and stuff. Does it give a wrong impression that things are back to normal, that there are people, that there are tourists, that the parades are going, the Zulus and the Rexes are marching and stuff? Does it give a false impression to the rest of the country?
No, there is a feeling that this is not just your typical Mardi Gras, so it's not a total celebration. The icons of Mardi Gras are the comic and the tragedy faces that are all over the place, the two faces, one sad and one happy. Well, this is the sad part about living in New Orleans, having to fight with hurricanes and then having to fight with hurricanes in the face of incompetency.
Mm-hmm.
It hurts.
Well,
so all of this joy that's out here is also a part of all the pain that's out here.
Well, now, you were among the first business owners to reopen after Katrina. How much has changed in the last 6 months for you?
A lot. One, we didn't have our same staff, so we had to recruit staff. Two, we didn't have a lot of young people who are more likely to work in a cafe because the universities and schools weren't open. And so we've gone full circle now. The universities are open, and the schools are open, and we have young people around, and we can hire. So when we started, came back from Katrina, meaning we couldn't find anybody. We worked ourselves, and we closed at 2 o'clock every day.
Hmm.
We're still today we're closing later today, and we're getting closer to a fuller complement of staff because the universities, the schools are back.
All right. Well, as you say, it may not be a normal Mardi Gras, but perhaps this Mardi Gras is a step in the right direction. You still have your trumpet in hand there, Kenneth?
I have my trumpet right here.
All right. I'm going to let you go catch up to the rest of the band for the rest of the march to the river. Thanks very much for joining us, and a happy Mardi Gras to you.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Kenneth Ferdinand. He's a trumpeter and owner of Café Rose Nicot, just 2 blocks from the French Quarter, speaking to us from the streets of New Orleans.